Hi, my name is Nosheen. I work on the PM team here at Microsoft running the SQL Server on Azure. I run the PM team and my title is Principal PM Manager.
Hi, my name is Luis Vargas. I'm also in the SQL Server on Azure Virtual Machine team and I'm a Senior Program Manager.
Yes, we will both be covering a session on SQL Server for Azure. I will be covering end-to-end story, explaining the tools and all the migration experience that you can use.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the different offerings that we have as well, contrasting, for example, Azure Database with running SQL Server on a virtual machine. We're going to do some drill downs on availability, performance, deployment. We're going to show some demos as well.
I think at the end of the session, one thing that you will take away is how easy it is to use SQL Server on Azure. Just migrating stuff should be like a simple thing for you guys.
Right, and I also want people to understand that they have 100% compatibility with on-premise, and anything that they're running today in on-premise can move super easily into Azure Virtual Machine.
One thing you might not know about me is that I interned at Oracle, and I left the dark side for good reasons.
Very good. One thing that you may know about me is I spent half of my life in Mexico, and then one quarter in England, and then I have spent the last quarter in here.
And we're back from the break. If you're watching us live in the stream, thank you very much for joining us once again. This is Level Up Azure IaaS for IT Pros. About the second last or so session that's in this particular series for what we're doing. So thank you very much for joining us if you've seen this. If this is on replay mode, obviously, you've seen a lot of great stuff so far today. Now, the sessions that we're kind of doing today are extending beyond just thinking about Azure IaaS into supporting services and supporting things. So we've already seen Azure Active Directory. We've already seen some Azure websites type stuff. I managed to track down a couple of guys to help me out on the SQL side of things. And I'm going to be joined momentarily here by Nosheen and by Lewis from the SQL side of the Azure on top of IaaS platform from the compute side of things, which is awesome for the stuff that's going to be coming up. If you do want to ask some questions, we're going to try our best to get to them. We'll see how much we can get through in this action-packed session. You can ask questions beneath the player on if this happens to be part of the live stream. You can also happen to reach out and contact us on the hashtag LevelUpAzure, and we'll be monitoring that for questions throughout the session and also even after this is all wrapped up as well. So without any further ado, I'm just actually going to jump right in to say, hey guys, what are we going to be talking about?
Great. I mean, it's a great day to be here. I'm Nosheen. It's Luis. We're on the PM team for SQL Server on Azure. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about SQL Server on Azure. So there's a bunch of content that we have here we would like to share with you. We have great interactive demos. We can walk through that, and I would like to see have a good interactive session. We can, you know, if you have any questions, just pop those up, and we'll walk through that.
Great, all good right? stuff.
All right, just to start off with, the way you want to think about all the things that are out there on Azure today in terms of databases, this particular slide will help you understand how to think about cost and control. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about Azure in general, one thing people always ask is, hey, how much control do I have on it? Or how much is it going to cost me? So this kind of, if you think of from that perspective, if you put that in access, the more control you want, the more costly it's going to be. So mm-hmm. obviously, if you want complete control, it's on-premise, have your SQL Server on your data center, and you can control the entire maintenance and what are the activities that you want to do on your SQL Server. But if you think about how to reduce a little bit cost, I think consolidation and virtualization mm-hmm. of servers is a great way to go. Mm-hmm. So just using a virtualized environment in your own data center will help you, reduce some cost, but still have the control of what you're doing on the database itself. Mm-hmm. That's when the cloud paradigm shifts in, saying that if you really want to, reduce the amount of cost that you have, whether it's maintenance costs, but still have some level of control on what you're doing with the database itself, that's when you think about Azure IaaS environment, which is basically infrastructure as a service. So mm-hmm. you can take your SQL Server and put it on Azure, still have control of what the workload is going to look like, how it is going to behave, and not worry too much about the underlying infrastructure in terms of, how are you going to maintain the network, what's going to happen with the compute and things like that. And then the next level beyond that is, hey, I really don't want to get into the weeds in trying to understand the infrastructure as well as the workload maintenance. That's where the PaaS offering of SQL comes into play, which is the SQL DB mm-hmm. offer. So basically, we will give you a database, and you can just connect to the database and don't worry about maintaining the workload itself.
So basic same kind of tools you're used to using, except now you're attaching up to the instance that happens to be up in Azure.
Yes, there are a couple of different set of tools available. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the same when it comes to PaaS and IaaS, but yes, in essence, it's basically you're able to connect to it and have some controls and tools around that, but necessarily not worry about the database itself.
Okay.
Yeah. And then obviously the ultimate of that is a software as a service where basically you're completing the entire app stack and you're not worrying about anything other than just running your functions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with that in mind, what we would like to do is just walk through on a high level, given that we represent SQL workloads in Azure, where do you want to use SQL Server when it comes to infrastructure as a service, and when do you want to use SQL DB, which is a PaaS offering.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at SQL Server in virtual machines, think about this as essentially, you're getting a VM. You know, underlying what you're getting is a compute. So you bring your own SQL Server, whether you're taking it from the gallery itself or you're uploading your own image.
Mm-hmm.
But the compute itself is provided by Azure. So you're not worried about the VM that is going to host it. And you're able to connect to it. And then you can control what version of SQL Server you want to use and what kind of edition you want to use. Like, you want to use 2014 SQL Server or do you want to use SQL 2012, something like that. And then you want to bring in say enterprise SKU,
mm-hmm.
or a web SKU, or a standard SKU, you control all of that. So what it brings to the table is you have a familiar experience of, you know, apps that you want to just lift and shift, as we call it, and basically move your app, you know, into the SQL Server, and don't worry about the infrastructure that runs that app. In this case, SQL Server itself. So the underlying compute will be pretty controlled mechanism of Azure platform managing that, whether it's, you know, VM type of VM sizes, the mm-hmm. network storage, everything that comes with it. On the other side, if you look at a SQL DB, essentially what you're doing is you're getting a database as opposed to a VM. So you're now connecting to a database, and you're saying that, hey, you know what, I want to run this queries here. I don't have to worry about maintenance of the database. You guys take care of it. If there's any GDPR requirements or replication requirements or high availability requirements, Azure takes care of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about. So there is a more think of this as another transparent layer on top of infrastructure as a service, which allows you to reduce your cost, at the same time reduces your control also.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two different flavors, I would say. And so if you're making a call on what you know, what is the right thing for you, you think about, do I take a familiar app and just move it to Azure, and I can control, I can maintain it, I can think about high availability, then infrastructure as a service is the right way to go. If you want to completely start anew and create a new app and think about scaling from 10 to hundreds of databases, not worry about database itself, then SQL DB, which is basically the PaaS service, is the way to go about that.
Now, I know you may not be the right guys to answer this individual question, but I know this is going to come up, so I thought I'd just head this one off. Licensing for this.
Mm-hmm.
When you choose it from the gallery,
mm-hmm.
It's an elevated cost to run that IaaS instance because the license is basically worked into the price of that particular
IaaS
instance?
Yes, exactly, yeah. So I think we'll get to the next slide
okay,
and actually
no
talks about that, which is because Perfect. It's a great question too.
It comes up all the time.
All the time, so absolutely.
I'm glad you have it inside your session. Here,
absolutely, so absolutely. So before we jump directly into the license, essentially what you're getting here is you are getting the VM, which is going to host your SQL Server.
Okay.
So now you can select that VM, which is basically the compute, either from gallery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you can select the size of the VM based on what your memory requirements are. You can go all the way from one core to 16.
Right.
And in fact, with the new G-Series that is being announced, you mm-hmm. can go up to 32 cores,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you can decide, hey, I want to bring in a SQL Server on top of that. So that's where the licensing question comes. The SQL Server can be selected from the gallery itself, or you can actually move it from your own data center. So if you already have a SQL Server that is already prepped up and say, hey, it all meets my needs, all I have to do is move it out into the cloud. We are providing an easy way to think about migrating the entire thing to cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're already using what is already you're familiar with. Or you can say that I don't want to go create something that I want to upload to a cloud. You can select from the portal and say, I want to just provision this SQL Server 2014 with operating system underneath whatever selection that you want to make, and then just use that VM to host that.
Okay, so the ability to take an existing VM of SQL on your on-premises environment, mm-hmm. you could take that one there and bring it up into Azure IaaS, as an example,
exactly.
Or
right.
you could very quickly provision one just from the gallery and essentially go from there.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so that's where the licensing question
comes. Licensing comes in.
So what happens is, you know, essentially there are three components in your licensing. When you're hosting something on Azure, you get a bill every month
mm-hmm.
or so, depending upon your choosing, and you get three different components for a SQL VM. So you have the SQL Server workload charges. then you have the compute charges, mm-hmm. and then you have the storage charges.
Okay.
Right? The compute is essentially your VM. So based on type of VM you're choosing, higher the bandwidth, and bigger size VMs, obviously the cost is going to be more.
So either the A's, the D's, the G's, and then the numbers inside of those.
Correct.
That's one component.
One component of it. Yeah. And then there's the SQL Server part of it.
Yeah.
So if you choose from the gallery, hey, I want an enterprise edition because I like the features there, obviously the charge of one, you know, for the enterprise edition will be going to be much more higher than say a web edition of SQL Server.
Yep.
So the way it is going to work is we are going to charge you based on usage, not actually, hey, I got, you know, enterprise license, I'm going to use it for 1 year, and it's all going to be, you know, baked into the product. It's based on usage, which is the advantage of having on Azure, because sometimes you can have it for dev tests, sometimes you can have it for a peak season performance. Mm-hmm. So it's all based on usage, and we charge it per the hour, and obviously it's differentiated between standard web and enterprise editions.
Okay.
That's how it is charged. The advantage of another aspect of SQL Server licensing is that if you're an enterprise customer with EA agreements, which is the enterprise agreements with Software Assurance on, mm-hmm. and you already have a SQL Server license running in your data center, say, hey, I already bought my SQL Server license. I have a SQL Server box running here in my data center. I really want to just take that license and apply something on SQL Server in Azure. You're welcome to do so.
Okay.
And you will not get charged for the SQL Server workload component of the usage.
So provided you have an EA in place, you're able to go off and transfer your license from on-premises up to the cloud environment.
Correct, exactly. Okay. Exactly. And that's a great way to go if you're an enterprise customer, want to run a SQL Server workload 24/7, 365 days of the year. That's a great way to go about that. Mm-hmm. As far as the compute is concerned, as I already mentioned, you know, depending upon what type of size of the VM you use, that will be charged a different component. And then obviously the storage. Again, the storage also is charged based on usage and not on allocated charges. And for the network itself, you know, there's no cost for incoming, it's only the outgoing for Azure. So all of that make the licensing pretty easy, very customizable according to your needs.
Okay, good.
Right.
Good.
And just to go a little further on how these VMs are allocated within the storage, you know, think of VMs, or the compute, underlying compute is another blob in Azure storage. Mm-hmm. And we have three copies that we maintain for sync local copies, and you can also expand it to remote async copies. So all these kind of, you know, three different additional copies helps us to provide more, you know, customizable SLAs, or not customizable, let's say more stronger SLAs guaranteed by Microsoft. So if you go to the next slide, what you will see is that you know, what we offer from Azure platform, because of all these additional copies that we have, there's no data loss for the compute itself. So for example, if there is a VM that goes down, you can always restart it on a different host. That happens very, very, very quickly. At the same time, if you want to, you know, because of the availability sets, we're basically out of two VMs, one VM is guaranteed to be up around 99.95% of the time. This is a guaranteed SLA provided by Azure.
Just a reminder that the availability set is this concept in Azure that allows you to locate these VMs in different racks.
Right, different racks, different update domains, and different fault zones.
Correct,
Good. That was, in case you're wondering, that's covered under the Drew McDaniel session talking about infrastructure as a service, architectural and best practices, stuff like that. So this all directly applies because it's a workload running on top of IaaS, right?
Right.
Okay, good.
Right. Yeah. So again, so what this 99.95% really translates to for as an end user is, think about this as a 22 minutes of downtime per month, which includes all of, you know, any host OS upgrades, maintenance, things like that, as well as any unplanned hardware failures. Obviously, you know, given infrastructure as a service, you are controlling the downtime associated with your software updates. Like, for example, you want to update the patching of SQL Server, that's something not included in this SLA. But the underlying compute is what this SLA covers.
Okay. Now, with the two availability sets, sorry, with the two VMs in an availability set, do you have to worry about configuring SQL to do some magic SQL stuff?
Exactly.
So it's not just having one here and one there.
Correct.
It's a bit more extra work to it. But obviously, I'm not a DBA, so.
Similar to how you do it on-premise today, you need to configure a high availability solution for SQL.
Right.
So this can be always on availability groups, for example, that we released in SQL 2012, or you could use database mirroring for people who have used that. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about it in a few slides.
We have a great demo actually lined up, so that'll be good to
I'll let you guys keep on going. Just
all right, cool.
You got it.
So essentially, once you provision this within minutes from the gallery, all you're getting is a public endpoint. Mm-hmm. So you can have the public endpoint over the internet and you can connect to your VM. So think of this as, you know, you can create it also a VNet or VPN tunnel
right.
for your on-premise to your cloud VM so that you can have more secure connections. You can use your VPN device or you can use Windows RAS to create the VPN tunnel. So all of this makes it so much easier for just provision a SQL Server if you want to move an existing app and just start using the power of Azure Compute.
Mm-hmm. And right? just to qualify that, if I remember correctly, the from when I set one up, the internet connectivity for public endpoints, it's not there for SQL out of a default out of the box.
Correct.
It's designed to work within the VNet within Azure.
Correct.
So it's not like you're exposing port 1433
correct.
Open for the world to see.
Yeah, exactly. It's completely secure.
You still have to go through multiple layers of security to be able to make it accessible.
Okay, absolutely. Good. Thanks for making the point. Yeah. So it does have all the security things that covered, making it much more easier for people to use it.
Right.
So you can add additional clients to that VNet and such features can connect to each other very easily.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the important things about the VPN tunnel is customers who today have their Windows authentication, for example, in place, so they have a bunch of users and mm-hmm. groups that they manage to Active Directory, and they want to move some of those applications to Microsoft Azure, they can simply move SQL Server, and after that they can join those virtual machines to their on-premise environment and just continue using the same users and groups. So they don't need to go and create new domains and levels of authentication, all of that is already in place.
Okay, good, good.
All right, so just to wrap up before we go into deep dive into things of demos that we just talked about of all the items. So you have a very large customizable way of looking at which workloads that you want to use. Mm-hmm. We have different versions of SQL Server available already prepackaged. Some of them are already optimized. For example, we have OLTP optimized images. So some of the best practices across the industry as well as what we proposed for different versions of SQL Server, we have took them in and we have created images for you so that you can always, within one click, you can deploy an optimized image, which otherwise would have taken probably a couple of days for a DBA to clearly understand and configure an image itself. So we have done that completely simple process for you. So within one click, you can go and provision an OLTP image, or you want a data warehouse image, we can do that too. On top of that, the compatibility is what really wins here. So if you really don't want to think about redesigning your app and you just want to move it up and say, I want to start using SQL Server right out of the box, right, on a compute which you don't have to worry about, then IaaS is the way to go.
Okay.
So I should that. So with that, we will dump into some of the demos that Luis is going to drive.
Thank you, Nushin. All right, so let's show a few of the demos here. I'm just going to let this loading. Okay. All right, so what we have here is the Microsoft Azure portal. So what I want to show you is how easy it is to go and provision a SQL Server virtual machine. So by default, you already have one shortcut here, but if you don't have a shortcut, you can just go into new and then everything. And then as part of everything, you can find data analytics, and then you can find anything related to data, including SQL. Right? So let's go and select the different versions that we have for SQL. So if you look here, we have many versions of SQL already in our gallery images. So we have anything from 2008 or 2. We have the latest SP, so the latest Service Pack 3. Remember that it's important to always be running on the latest SP. There's always additional value. Any hot fixes that we identify, we put them there. So the same day as we release the service packs, we have these gallery images updated.
Okay.
So it's always something useful to have.
And this is the gallery that you would see through the management portal. It's the current portal now. And this you're looking at right now through the preview portal.
Exactly.
As well. Good.
So this is the preview portal. So you can access it through the original portal or mm-hmm. the preview portal.
And obviously likewise as well through PowerShell if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So you see, we have different versions. We have Enterprise, Standard, Web. Same thing for SQL 2012, so the latest SP, SP2. We have Enterprise, Standard, Web, etc. Nushin was mentioning how we have these optimized images. So you see, for example, we have one here that is optimized for data warehousing, another one that is optimized for transactional workloads, exactly the same. And then we get into SQL 2014. So again, you see we have 2014 Enterprise. You notice that we have this thing called Always On. I'm going to show that later in a different demo that does something else. And then you see they optimize images as well as the standard and web. So whatever version you are using today, if you want to continue using it just in the cloud, you can go and do it. Let's look, for example, at one of these optimized ones. So if I click on this one, this is a 2014 Enterprise image optimized for transactional workloads. So mm-hmm. if you have an OLTP workload, You have a lot of concurrent transactions that you want to execute in the system. This image basically will give you the best performance out of the platform, right? And it contains already many best practices that SQL Server has recommended customers for a long time. Mm-hmm. You get a description of the image, so you know what to expect. Most of the images allow you to run in any size of the virtual machine. So most of the images can run even a couple of cores, although we recommend at least 4 cores for SQL. In this case, the optimized images is intended for VM sizes that will provide you the best possible performance. So for example, in this case, we talk about sizes from A4 to D14. And all of these sizes are basically sizes that provide at least 8 cores and 16 disks, right? And this is basically because the number of disks will give you the right I/O throughput that you require for your application.
Right.
These A4 to A9 machines, again, are the standard virtual machine sizes that we have had for some time. D4 to D14, these are the new D-series that come with SSD drives. So these SSD drives allow you to benefit from, for example, putting temp DB for transient operations, or putting buffer pool extensions. So if there are some workloads that don't fit in the memory of the VM, right? So read workloads, and you are constrained in the memory size. For example, 112 gigabytes of RAM may not be enough. You can always use one of these D14 VM sizes and configure these buffer pool extensions. This is a feature in SQL that was released in 2014. And then extend the buffer pool, which is basically the area of memory where SQL maintains all the common data that SQL mm-hmm. is using.
Now, because this is an optimized image, is that done for you, or is it something that you could do after you've gone off and deployed it? For instance, like the D series with the SSD that's a non-persistent disk.
So you could always do it in case you want to do it manually. The advantage of using these optimized images is already baked as part
so
of the
So it's already
image.
Done for you?
It's already done.
Oh, okay,
as part
good,
of that.
Good.
So it's definitely very useful. For people who want to learn more about these things, there's always a documentation aspect. So we give all the information here. We have a feature comparison across editions. So if customers are wondering, what is the benefit between enterprise or standard or mm-hmm. web or these optimized images, how do I choose? So we have all that information in place. We have a support forum. So every day, we look at it. If you have any questions, we can help you with that. And obviously, the pricing details of how this works.
Right.
So we go and create here. We bring this blade, and this will ask me for some information. So the first part is the name of the host, right? And then the name of the user. So sorry, this is moving a little bit. Okay, so it's still loading. It's asking me about the pricing tier. So the pricing tier is again the size of the VM. So I'll be able to select what VM size I want, and then show me the price for that. Some information about network storage and diagnostics, so I can specify the VNet. We're talking about the VNet, where to store it, and finally the location, right? So this is still loading. So this is it will take a little bit of time. So let's see if this loads. If we can go back to the previous portal and try that one. So in terms of the documentation, we're asking, some of the customers were asking, how do we get access to all the information about privacy and configuration and migration and all that? So we have all the information in place here. So all of this is at the end of the deck. You'll be able to see that. I was mentioning about the forum, so people will be able to ask questions as well, and just the pricing details. So for people who are looking into how much does it cost, we're talking about the different core sizes and the different editions and how we define the cost per hour. So let's see, so this is loading now. So we can give a name to the VM. So we specify some name here, a name to the administrator. This is the both the machine administrator as well as the SQL administrator that
right.
can use.
Oh, okay, good.
Right, the password, right. And then in terms of the optional configuration, I can specify things like availability sets. So we're talking about availability sets. So if you have multiple VMs, for example, and you want to locate them in different racks mm-hmm. so that none of them fail together, you can put them there. The storage account. So all of those disks associated with that virtual machine need to be stored somewhere. So you can specify the storage account to use for that.
These are the similar options that you would get with any traditional IaaS deployments.
Exactly
this
the same
simply
thing.
Has the one that's required for this particular gallery image. That's it.
Correct. So that's what you can specify. A couple of other things. So you can specify diagnostics, for example. So it's a powerful feature. So if you go and configure on for diagnostics, you'll be able to basically automatically start tracking performance counters for that virtual machine. Mm-hmm. So things like CPU usage, memory utilization, I/O network, etc. And as part of this diagnostics infrastructure, we have added SQL performance counters. So just by enabling this feature, later I'll be able to look, for example, at transactions per second, transaction mm-hmm. latency, number of deadlocks, and things like that. So all of that is contained as part of.
So some of this is actually part of the powerful features of the preview portal that's able to do this. In the traditional management portal, those options aren't available to be able to go off and see. So
correct.
Right. We haven't done during this series a big contrast between what you could do on the new preview portal and the management portal. So it's actually very cool to see a lot of these options coming up.
Correct. So basically after this point, once you have selected those options, you can go into create. And the create will take around 10 minutes. So it takes around 10 minutes to get this provision image. Something I wanted to show you is how the image looks once you hit provision already.
Yeah.
Because it will come with a bunch of optimizations. So if we click here into the optimized image, we will see some of the information associated with the image. So in this case, I see that the virtual machine is running. It comes with a domain name. So the domain name, again, is a name that I can use over the internet if I want to connect to the VM. Mm-hmm. This will require you to open an endpoint. So
right.
It's only if you want to do that. It comes into one virtual network itself. So if you want, for example, to go and add a website, you just go and create the virtual machine for the website or the website itself as part of the virtual network, and then it can connect. We'll talk about the monitoring aspect. So in this case, I'm already tracking CPU utilization, disk reads and writes, network utilization, et cetera. Number of disks. So we talk about the disks. In this case, this machine comes with 16 disks. Right, I can look at the total size of them, so it's almost 16 terabytes of data. And that's it. So if there are some operations here, some alerts, it will be raised. If I go into one of these images, so if I actually connect to the image, let's look at what information we have. So let's go here. All right, so let's show the configuration information here. The first thing is, if I look at the virtual machine, just from Windows Explorer, you see that it comes already with four drives, right? So I have the C drive, which is for the operating system.
Right.
That's where everything for Windows lives. I have the temporary drive. In this case, this is a D14 machine. So this comes with an SSD drive.
You're running this on a D14?
Yes.
Wow.
I know.
Cool.
So in this case, this comes with an SSD drive. I can, for example, put my TempDB there.
Right.
Right? So anything that requires temporary operation is going to be faster. For example, index rebuilds, like that's a common operation that takes time. And then you see I have another drive called E. This is for the log. And you'll see that this is 3 terabytes. So some people may be wondering, how is that possible? Because the drives are maximum 1 terabyte.
Right.
So we actually do this through storage pools in Windows, and I'll show you that in a second. And then you see we have another drive for the data. And this drive is 12 terabytes, right? So it's allow you to store up to 12 terabytes of data mm-hmm. in the system, right? So how do we do this? So we go into the server manager, right? And we look into the disks. It's basically the same information that we had before, except that here it shows that the drive E is a storage pool, right? This is OLTP SQL log, and then the drive F is another storage pool, and this is for the data, OLTP SQL data. We can look into more detail about how these storage pools are built, things like the stripe sizes, for example, that mm-hmm. we use, the number of disks, and things like that. So if we look at the storage pool for the log, you'll see that this comes with 3 disks. So you have 3 physical disks. Remember, each of these disks will give you 500 IOPS.
Right.
So you get your 1,500 IOPS for the log. And then we look at the data, and the storage pool here comes with 12 disks, right? Mm-hmm. So you can multiply 12 times 500, and that's the number of files that you get in the system for data.
What I love about this is that all this is set up for you because you chose that optimized template, as opposed to just doing a generic one, and then you would have to go in and tweak and tune all these different knobs to be able to get to the same level of performance.
Exactly. And there is more than that. So if you go, for example, into SQL Configuration Manager, you look into the properties of the service, and then the startup parameters. you'll notify that there is some additional configuration here. So for example, again, this is a configuration to specify where to store the log, the data, and the backups. So we are already telling SQL, use this storage pool. So every time that you create a database, by default, the data and the log of that database will go into the storage pool, so you don't have to think about it, as well as additional trace flags. So some trace flags, for example, to you know, optimize the usage of TempDB and optimize the usage of the log files. So all of these are things that, again, for many years, we have been telling customers to do it. And now we have this flexibility of just having it by default with the image. So going back to the presentation, about a scenario. So one of the common questions that we get is, what are the things that I can do with this SQL Server running on Azure Virtual Machines? Mm-hmm. So the most common scenario that we have is lift and shift. And this basically means people having an application today that is running SQL on-premise, just transparently moving that application to Microsoft Azure. And the important thing here is that it is without any changes. So if you already, you know, you are using SQL 2014, or you're still using 2008 or 2, you can simply move this to one of our gallery images. You can do this in any way you want. So, you know, if you need a larger machine than what you have today on-premise, you can go and select one of those machines. If you think that you need a smaller machine now, but maybe, you know, during Christmas time, you're going to need a bigger machine, you can go and change that at any point of time. Remember that you pay only for what you use. So if you only need to run this, you know, 3 or 4 hours during the day, you can just keep it running during that time, and then you stop the machine, and you don't get charged for that. Mm-hmm. Depth test. So you know, you have a development team or a testing team, and you want to go and build a new application using SQL. You can always go and do this. So you can, for example, take a backup of some database that you have on-premise, restore it into one of the SQL servers in the cloud, and then you have a copy that your developers and testers can use.
Mm-hmm. It's good to point out for this one here that also, in case you're not aware, if they're using MSDN benefits for this, obviously it's going to be different rates for MSDN benefit images specifically for dev and test, besides the option of turning them on and turning off.
Absolutely.
Then going through the regular trial. We actually had a question that came up on Twitter from Simon_Cloud that was simply asking, can I set up the SQL databases like you just did with the free trial?
Yep.
And the answer is absolutely yes, but you only have a $200 credit. Correct. And 30 days to be able to use it. Mm-hmm. And then you switch to a pay-as-you-go. So if you were going to provision a D14, like you just did, you might go through that $200 credit pretty quick. That's our largest instance size that we currently make available. So watch out for that.
Exactly. All right.
And just to add on to that, the dev test scenario, right? A lot of customers, whether it is, you know, just people trying out the kicking the tires, mm-hmm. or even enterprise customers, they use the MSDN programs and just to get see how they feel about this lift and shift, right?
Yep.
So that's a great way to actually go start using Azure.
Yeah, and so with the MSDN subscription, that one there is a renewable credit. You basically mm-hmm. have a certain amount of credit based on your subscription level, and then you basically are capped at that amount. Mm-hmm. And then you're basically waiting for more time to come through. The month goes past, and then you get that credit back again. So MSDN has a great option for that, especially for the dev test scenarios.
Yep. One interesting scenario that we are seeing many customers starting to adopt is hybrid, right? And I think over the past 2 years, in general, in the industry, it's something that people have been talking about. In terms of hybrid and SQL, what exactly does this mean? So there are a couple of examples. One of the examples is integrating your SQL Server with some domain infrastructure that you already have on-premise. Mm-hmm. So for example, if we talked about it, Active Directory before, all those users, passwords, groups, you can just reuse those, right?
Right.
The other thing that we can do is you can have, for example, your SQL Server still running on-premise, but then add a replica into the cloud. So you can have a SQL Server secondary replica that is continuously synchronizing all of those transactions from on-premise, mm-hmm. and then you can use that replica in the cloud, for example, for disaster recovery, in case that, you know, your environment becomes unavailable for some reason because a VPN fails or, you know, or whatever happens, you can always fail over to the cloud and continue running. Or you can use that replica, for example, for read workloads. So again, if you have some reporting applications and you want to move them outside of your primary server, you can always do that. Or even take backups, right? So you need to maintain backups outside of your main data center, you can do that.
Yeah, that kind of covers one of the questions that Eric Dempsey had up here, which was talking about going ahead and using SQL inside of an environment. Because we, with our storage, go through and set up so that we have 3 copies of data in the background for stuff like that. In the SQL VMs, it says not to use geo-replication in the storage due to asynchronous replication. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, absolutely. Just so Eric's got his question answered there?
So geo-replication, for people who is not aware, it basically means Azure Storage itself asynchronously copying all that data right, from those blobs that store the disks into a different region, so that in case that one region becomes unavailable, you have the other region available. Now, that copy is asynchronous today, and the copy is independent for each disk, right? So if you have a virtual machine with multiple disks, and some of those disks contain your log, and some of them contain your data, it's possible that they're not in sync when you do a failover to the other region.
Right.
So what we recommend customers from the SQL perspective is, if you have a single disk, so if your workload is small enough, that, for example, it's dev test or it's production, but still it's very, very small, and you have a single disk, then you can use your application as a simplest, cheapest alternative for disaster recovery. But if you're using multiple disks, or you need a way to test disaster recovery, to be able to do failovers between different regions, we recommend to use a SQL database disaster recovery solution. So we have, again, always on availability groups, so you have database mirroring. So in the same way as how today customers implement this between their two data centers, you can configure this between two Azure regions.
Right.
And this will allow you to basically test your failover at any point in time, and the failover is going to take around 10 to 15 seconds.
So again, design it correctly as if you were doing this on-premises, but now you have the option of having different on-premises options because it could be in different geographical areas up in the Azure IaaS world.
Exactly.
So it doesn't just because it's backed up three times doesn't mean that you're covered with disaster recovery. Use the proper tools you're supposed to be using within SQL itself.
Correct.
Okay, good.
All right, so just quickly going through deployment. So today, if you want to move some workloads into Azure Virtual Machine, what can you do from the SQL perspective? So first thing you can do is use one of the gallery images. So we showed you before, we have many gallery images available. All of them include the engine, reporting services, analysis services, integration services, and management studio. So anything that you need to build and manage your SQL application is there. Again, we refresh this every month with the latest fixes. Or you can bring your own image. So if you already have some virtualized environment, you can just go and create a BHD, like a physical image of your virtual machine, and then upload this to Azure Storage. And once you have it in Azure Storage, you can simply access it as if it was another gallery image, right? And you can provision a virtual machine out of it. So you have the two options available. Something else. If you have a database that you want to move to the cloud, what is the easiest way of doing this? So obviously you could do different things. You could take a backup, upload it manually, and then restore it. We try to simplify things, you know, especially because as Microsoft, we have access to both the SQL or the database system as well as the cloud provider, so we can integrate them and provide the best end-to-end experience. So for example, in SQL 2014, we released something called the Deployment Wizard. And the Deployment Wizard allows you to just migrate one or more databases from your SQL Server instance into an Azure Virtual Machine. And then this will handle everything for you. You know, you will just take the backup, put it in a chair, and automatically move it to Azure, restore it into the virtual machine, and have everything running for you. So I think I'm going to leave this demo to the end because there is another demo that I want to show before, and I think people are going to find it more interesting.
Sure.
So we're talking about high availability before, business continuity. So some of the customers that want even higher availability than the 99.95% that we talked about before, they want to reduce even those 22 minutes of downtime. Something that they can do is configure a SQL Server HA solution, right? So similar to how they do it today on-premise, they can configure availability groups or database mirroring. And what happens in that case is what we have in the picture here. So imagine you have your primary, you have a secondary server. These are configured in some availability group or database mirroring session. If for some reason the primary fails because the VM fails for some reason or the VM is being patched at that point in time, the secondary will automatically become the primary, right? And this process takes around 10 seconds. After this happens, the previous primary will come online at some point, and I will start synchronizing again from the new primary. And that's how you will always ensure that you have a high availability configuration. So anything that you learned before, how to do this on-premise, still applies. The only difference is that this is between virtual machines running in Azure. What I wanted to show is, even when this is an infrastructure as a service offering and you have full control, we try to simplify some of these configurations for you. Something that we did a couple of months ago was to introduce the always-on portal template. And what this allows you to do is configure this always-on configuration end-to-end. So let me show you that one. I think that's an interesting thing to look at.
While you're getting that one set up, that's a question just came up here from KW, long Twitter handle name, but basically he's asking about licenses. We talked a little about license at the beginning of the session, but he had one that was not potentially covered just yet. Can I use my license for SQL, my on-premises license for SQL, with the gallery images that are pre-configured in the session?
So yeah, today, no. Okay. So today, if you want to bring your own license, especially you're applying it to your own image. Mm-hmm. So that's the differentiation. So basically, the gallery images has always a license baked in inside it.
Okay.
So that's why it's already being, so you don't have to worry about getting some license somewhere else and trying to apply it to existing images on the gallery. So mm-hmm. it's already baked in. All the cost includes the license of the SQL itself.
Right. Yeah. So in this case, if they had an enterprise agreement, it would be a matter of they would be able to take their virtualized SQL instance and then move that virtualized SQL instance up into the Azure IaaS platform.
Absolutely. That's the way to go.
So that way it is transferable. Absolutely. If you have an enterprise agreement.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool. All right, so what we were talking about before is configuring always on. So again, when you look into these gallery images, you'll find one that is called SQL Server 2014 always on. So if you click on that one, you'll see that we have a description here. It will configure high availability for SQL Server, and it will provision what is in the picture. So this is what you get. So you get two SQL Server replicas, one primary and one secondary. Right? These are part of an availability set. Right? Always on, for people who are familiar with, it is based on Windows Cluster. So mm-hmm. Windows Cluster is the high availability solution that we have underlying for many Microsoft solutions, and that's right. One of the ones that we use here. The other thing that we configure for you is a domain controller as well. So, many customers require having a domain controller, require having users and groups. So we configure even that, and we configure a secondary replica for the domain controller, and this guarantees even high availability for the domain controller. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about the availability set. So both the SQL replicas as well as the domain controllers are part of their own availability set. And this guarantees that they are always online. So if you click on create, again, basically what you have to specify a couple of things. So the first thing is a resource group, and the resource group is just a container for your deployment.
Right.
Right? Just a simple container.
And that one there is unique to the new preview portal, being able to build all the stuff together.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Just give it a name. The next thing is you need a username that will be able to access all of these resources in the domain. Mm-hmm. Right. So by default, in this case, I'm going to use the classic Contoso. It's just a domain name.
Yep.
This is a domain that will be created for you, so you can specify whatever you want. So the password, again, this is my administrator password. This is, again, to manage the VM as well as SQL Server. And then if you look into the SQL Server settings, okay. So let's look at the information that we have. So you can specify the name for the availability group. Right, very powerful concept. We have something called the availability group listener, which we configure by default. And the listener is just a DNS name. Mm-hmm. It's some name that all your applications can use to connect to the primary. So even after there is failovers, you can always connect to the primary mm-hmm. easily, right? So you don't have to change your connection string. So this is the name that my applications will use to connect to SQL Server. And then the pricing tier. So again, this is different sizes of the virtual machines. We recommend by default either A5, A6, or A7. You can choose whichever you want. And that's it. Let's see what else we have useful here. Pretty much that's the important thing, the location. So you can specify, where do you want this configuration to go? So it can go into East US, Central US, mm-hmm. Europe, Asia, et cetera. And that's where this high available SQL configuration will happen, right? Then you can go click create, and then again, it takes around an hour today. So you may assume that it's a lot of time, but doing this manually will probably take you at least 5 or 6 hours.
I was about to say, at least 5 or 6 hours you're doing this manually, but this is all done for you from an automation perspective.
It's all done for you. So in fact, I have one that is already configured here. So let's look into this one. So I look at the resource group, and it will show me everything that is contained. So It'll show me that I have 5 virtual machines. Oops, sorry, this is moving. So if I look at the virtual machines, you'll see that I have my 2 SQL Server replicas, and then I have my witness file share. Again, this is something that, in general, it is required for high available systems. You need to maintain quorum. So I have this one. And then I have my 2 domain controllers, primary and secondary. So all of that is configured for you. At this point, let's connect to one of them. So if I actually connect to one of these SQL VMs, this is information that I'll get for the configuration. So this is what you get out of the box. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is you get a database, right? You see a long name. So this is basically the name that I gave to the resource group. And then we just attach the name of a database. And you see that there is one availability group that is created by default. So the availability group, again, is the name that I specified. It comes with 2 replicas. So these are 2 SQL per 2 machines. And they are protecting that database. And the reason why we did it is because you already have a template mm-hmm. that you can use. So if you just want to protect another database, basically just add it to this availability group and automatically get the protection for that one. And then I have the listener that we talked before. Right? So if you look into more detail, here on the right side, we have, we call it the SQL dashboard. This provides you all the health information for that availability group. So you can see that I have my 2 replicas. That they are configured as synchronous. And what this means is every transaction that commits on the primary has to commit on the secondary. Mm-hmm. Right? And this is how we avoid any data loss in the system. At the same time, they're configured for automatic failover. And that means that if for some reason the primary goes down, we'll automatically fail over to the secondary. And again, this process takes 10 seconds. So it guarantees that your SQL workloads are continuously running. So that's what I wanted to show at this point. Let's go back to the deck. There's still a couple of things that are interesting. There was a question about disaster recovery, right, and whether to use your replication or not. So yeah, if you want to be able to test disaster recovery, many customers want to do that mm-hmm. and verify that everything works, you can configure or you can extend this availability group across different regions. So in the same way as how I show you have 2 virtual machines in the same region, you can start adding virtual machines in different regions. And that's how this availability group allows you to fail over across them. So we released this probably like 6-7 months ago. Mm-hmm. We actually have some customers who have tried this. Some of them have even tried it between on-premise and the cloud. They wanted to still maintain a local copy and do it between on-premise and cloud. The failover times are very, very good. It's around 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. So definitely something that to consider. Everything is secure. So around 2 months ago, we released something called internal endpoints. And what this allows you to do is connect these replicas in the different regions only inside of the tunnel, so okay, nobody else can connect or try to connect to them. We talk about performance. So we talk about the D series that we release.
Right.
This comes with SSDs. Again, you can use them to store TempDB, for example, there. The good thing about these SSDs is they give you a lot of IOPS. So you get around 32,000 IOPS mm-hmm. And very low latency. It's around less than 1 millisecond latency. So if you have things like queries that handle very large record sets that need to be kept in memory, or you're rebuilding indexes continuously, or you have temp tables, especially if they're big, or you have multi-version concurrency, things like optimistic concurrency and things like that, you can always use TempDB in SSDs and everything is going to be faster. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you can do is put buffer pool extensions there. And again, any workloads that don't fit in memory will go to the buffer pool extension.
And again, I love how if you choose one of the gallery images with those types of machines, it automatically is configured to use those from an optimization perspective. It's great.
Right. Got it. The other thing is, people who today are already running their SQL Servers and they just want to go and try it, they can move into one of these sizes and then they can manually just run the T-SQL. It's very simple as well. Mm-hmm. So the first T-SQL is just to change the location of TempDB, and the only thing you have to do is move it to the D drive. And the second location is to just configure this buffer pool extension. And the only thing that you specify is the name of a file that is going to store your hot pages and the size of the file that you want to store. Mm-hmm. In general, we recommend 4 times the size of the memory.
Right.
So they have many customers using it today. If you want to go and read about some of them and how they're using SQL in production workloads in Azure, there are some examples. So you can go and read the cases. We have GE Healthcare, for example. We have Blinbox, Toyota, et cetera. So you can go and check them, and you know they have been running successfully.
While you have that one there, we have two questions around the security side of things. If one of you guys could just quickly touch on these, because we're getting close to the end of the session here. Right. One of them is from Ken, and it's actually quite what I think is a pretty simple question. It was asking about creating a VM. You got SQL database, so you got the database up there as an attached disk. That's where the data would reside. The project is now done, you want to go in and you remove that VM. You want to remove that database. How can you ensure, what is in place to ensure that all the data that's inside the SQL database is basically destroyed? And it's gone.
Got it. So the VM itself can only live if it has some storage associated with it.
Right.
So the moment that you delete the VM, any disks that the VM was using are deleted.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you know, Azure Storage, it tries to do it very quickly. It's a multi-tenant environment.
Right.
So we try to reuse this as soon as we can. So the moment that the VM is destroyed, all of those disks will go out.
Right. And also the whole concept of IaaS is you have more control. That's the whole point. And also, one quick way to look at, just look at the dashboard. The moment you delete the VM, all the associated accounts are also cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's no access to it.
Dilbert had a question. Had a question about encryption on the SQL side of things.
Right.
Any touch points on that at all?
So you can encrypt. By default, Azure Storage, you know, guarantees that basically you have this concept of similar to virtual networks. We have it in compute. We have this separation in the storage level, and then your storage account is only accessible by you. So you have a key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is an encryption key that you can use, and only you can access anything in that storage account. So nobody else can do that. On top of that, if you want to, you can always go and encrypt your databases, for example. So in SQL Server, we have something called transparent database encryption, TDE. Mm-hmm. You can configure that. And what that means is SQL will maintain a key, right? Somewhere, by default, is in the master database running in the instance. And only SQL is able to go and encrypt and decrypt the database. So you have the two levels, at the storage level as well as at the database level.
So the big thing to take away from that is simply that the functionality that you expect to find on-premises SQL for the newer versions and the current versions that are running, if you're running those versions up in the Azure IaaS space, you have access to all those same functionality and features.
Exactly.
Right? It's not like it's a customized, hacked up version as there.
It's exactly
what you're seeing. It's optimized, obviously.
Yeah. And also there was a couple of other few questions. You know, can I use the primary on-premise and the secondary on Azure? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool hybrid scenario that's completely supported. And you can use your templates or you can use Add Azure Replica Wizard that you already available in SQL Server 2014 to just add more replicas to your primary replica on-premise. And it's all taken care of easily. In addition to that, there was another question about can I use SQL Server Manager to look at SQL Azure? Absolutely. There are tools that are built into SQL Server that you can just go connect, and from your SSMS, you can see what's happening on Azure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So if you want to go and learn more about customers, some of these customers are doing exactly what they ask, primary in-premise, secondary in the cloud.
Good.
You can go and read that. Resources, in case you want to go and learn more, the first place to go is the SQL Server on Azure Virtual Machine page. So we have all the information there, and that's where you can start with. So you can go and simply, you have the link there to go and create a SQL machine. So you have the information about customers and the different scenarios and how you can use it. We talked about the documentation before, so it's very detailed, anything associated with running SQL Server on Azure. And I think at this point, that's all we have.
That's fantastic. Right on time. We wrapped up with a lot of the questions that were answered as well. I'm going to say, you know what, guys, unless you have any closing thoughts that you want to just leave with for these guys at all?
Yeah, we have several forums that we monitor almost on a daily basis.
Good.
So if you see any questions, feel free to just post the question on the forum, and we'll definitely look at those as great feedback.
And again, the forums, in case you're interested, if they're the same forums the other guys have been mentioning, the gals have been mentioning, it is feedback.azure.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On the right-hand side, it's powered by User Voice. On the right-hand side, there's a section there. We've been talking about the virtual machines one in the past. Do you guys monitor that one as well?
Yes.
Is there a dedicated one just for SQL as well?
There is one particular one.
Okay.
So if you look under azureforums.com, you will see something for SQL, and you should just go post those.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, guys, taking time out of your busy day to come down and do this. I really appreciate this. Again, this is going to be available in an on-demand format that people can go off and take a look at if they want to. We'll be right back after the break for our final session of the day, which is going to be talking about running SharePoint on top of Azure IaaS. So come back after the break and see us then.
Thank you.